You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Matt Hasselbeck Show is coming up in an hour. We'll spend some time with Matt as he goes into the Ring of Honor on Monday night. We'll do our regular 9 o'clock hour on Wednesday with Matt. Some great stories and kind of point out some of his best moments and get some behind-the-scenes memories from Matt. So looking forward to that. We'll also have Seahawks tickets to give away during that 9 o'clock hour with Matt. So make sure you're listening, and we can send you to the game to watch Matt get inducted on Monday night. In the meantime, it was not the road trip anybody was expecting. Yeah, we knew it would be a little challenging, but the way it started with a good comeback and nearly an opportunity in Vegas and then the win, it just felt like you could do better than a three-point road trip. But that's how the Kraken come home, winning just one and with an 0-1 overtime loss on their five-game trip, getting ready to open up Climate Pledge Arena on Saturday night. So we thought we'd talk to Nick Gismondi of Root Sports, new in town and covering the Kraken for Root. Good morning, Nick. Thanks for hanging out with me for a few minutes.
Hey, nice to be with you. Nice to meet you over the radio, and looking forward to doing it in person soon, too.
Very cool. Well, just before we dig into the Kraken, give me the 30-second, 45-second bio for those who haven't had a chance to see yet. Where'd you come from? What are you doing here talking hockey?
26-year broadcaster. Spent the last four seasons in the National Hockey League. I was actually one of the studio hosts to welcome in the Vegas Golden Knights, which was an awesome time in their first 2 years of expansion into the NHL. And then the last two seasons, spent it with the Chicago Blackhawks as their in-game analyst on NBC Sports in Chicago with a legendary broadcast duo of Pat Foley and Eddie Olczyk. And John Forslund, the play-by-play man here, is one of my closest friends for a long, long time, as well as some of the management with the Kraken. So just an incredible opportunity to be here with you all in an unreal city with an unreal expansion team. It's hard to say no to.
Well, I've been really impressed with just the broadcast. Your Forslund's unbelievable. I mean, he just has brought such an incredible professionalism to a brand new broadcast. It's awesome. I mean, I grew up in the Northeast watching hockey, so the idea of having some real pros has been great. So thanks for being here. It's how's it been so far? Are you enjoying it?
I love it. This is my kind of a town too. I'm an outdoorsy guy and I love the water. So just the vibe and the feel here and the seafood and the fan base that already has just been just incredibly welcoming is pretty special. Like I said, I enjoyed my time in Chicago. I truly did. It's a rock star hockey town. It's a rock star sports town. But when an opportunity like this presents, you can't say no. Location, team, the organization's first class, and like I said, the opportunity to work with John, it's great here.
Cool. All right, so unfortunately, a three-point trip, not quite what anybody was looking for. What of the issues that cropped up here in the last few games, which ones do you think are real and which ones are kind of chalked up to exhaustion / long trip, not enough practice, things that will get worked out?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more positive than negative here, and I think there's a lot for the fan base to be excited about. There was a lot of factors that came into this trip and a lot of things that sort of got thrown at them that, you kind of don't necessarily plan for, especially even in a pandemic era. But having guys that weren't able to make the trip initially because of COVID protocols and getting a couple of bad breaks, we talk about puck luck a lot in hockey, the kicked in goal in Vegas, the near misses here and there, a couple bad bounces. So overall, what I really love about this team is the fight. They were in every single game, all right, maybe without that Philly game got away from them a little bit, but they started strong there. So the positives for these guys far outweigh any negatives. I don't think there's any panic in that room. I think that Coach Haxtell's got complete control of these guys. And I just think that, listen, there are a bunch of new guys. There's 23 new guys working together for the first time. And then last night you get thrown another wrinkle with Driedger injured and having to bring up Joey Dackard from the AHL that day. So they've been thrown a lot of different things and they've been in these hockey games. So I think that, for me, everything that's positive about this group outweighs anything that may have come out of this road trip. They deserved better, and I think it was certainly more than a three-point trip.
Well, and the other thing you saw yesterday, as we're talking to Nick Ismondi of Root Sports, and he's covering the Kraken there, was the return of Yanni Gord. And gosh, the word he kept using and everybody uses with him is energy. You see it when you watch him in practice. I thought it translated pretty well on the ice last night. What'd you think of him?
Oh, yeah, he's the spark that these guys needed. And you saw it right away yesterday, right? He gave them a bump immediately getting into the lineup, just the buzz of him being there. But, you know, I talked to his former coach in Tampa Bay yesterday before the game, and he said, Gizmo, this guy is just, he's annoying to play against. He's just pure annoying to play against because he's all over you the entire time. And the best thing about Yanni, and you saw it a couple times yesterday, he's got this ability to get under guys' skin, and that's going to benefit this team so much down the rip, because you have that little edge, you have that little annoyance guy that's just constantly poking you and tapping you on the shoulder, and that can get under the best guy in the league's skin sometimes. So what he brings as a hockey player in terms of his ability and that energy that we hear so much about, he also has this pester element to him that massively complements the game.
Also, they're going to get some opportunity to practice now. I mean, they really didn't get to with a road trip like that to start. Where do you see the emphasis being in practice here and some things that they can clean up in the next couple of days and weeks?
Yeah, they got to get a little bit better on the rush as well as stopping the rush. So gap control was something big that we kind of saw them a little bit tentative on. And then I would just say...
So let me stop you. Hold on, Nick. Let me stop you there. For new hockey fans that are... Because a lot of our listeners are going to be new to this. When you say on the rush versus stopping the rush, go into a little more detail.
Yeah, think about it as just how quickly the opposition is coming down on you to try to score and how quickly you're coming down on the opposition trying to score. That would be kind of sort of classified as a rush.
Almost like a fast break, right? I mean, just to compare it to basketball, like a fast break situation as opposed to setting up in the offensive zone and running your offense, so to speak.
Correct. Exactly. Perfectly explained. And then gap control is just as simple as the difference between you and the person with the puck. Time and space are the two most dangerous things in a hockey game, especially when these guys are moving so quickly. So you want to respect your opponent and give him a little bit of room, but you want to be within reach so that if he makes a play, you can sort of jump on him a little bit. And if you don't have that sort of proximity to your opponent, that's when sort of bad things happen. And we saw them get scored on a couple of times over this road trip where they just were not quite managing that gap too fantastically inside of their own zone. And as a result, you know, the opposition can exploit that, move the puck around a little bit more freely, and have a little bit more free rein to get shots on net. So these are easy little things that is just simply chalked up to guys playing with new guys for the first time and just trying to smooth that out. A couple of practices fixes all those things real easily.
What are you looking forward to Saturday night?
Wow. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing all of you enjoy it. I've been lucky enough to be part of it when I was in Vegas and we opened T-Mobile Arena, and I remember having goosebumps the entire time being a part of it, but more so just watching those fans who deserved hockey for so long and who got it like little kids on Christmas. And I think it's the faces for me and the emotions of a city that deserves hockey so much, and that's what you guys are. And I think that this fan base is so amazing, and I think that I can't wait to just see the smiles and the energy and that, you know, adults or people of any age, you know, walking into that arena first time and being like a little kid coming down the stairs around the corner and seeing all the presents under the Christmas tree, because that's sort of what I feel you all are going to experience. And it's just going to be really special to get to see that for the second time and get to do it as part of the organization.
I can't think about that night in Vegas without thinking of Derek Englund coming up with that goal right near the beginning of the game. I mean, it was just such an, I mean, obviously with everything that had happened in that town leading up to it, what an incredible moment that was. How do you top that?
Well, you know, I think the one thing that a lot of people want to try to do this year is make comparisons to Vegas. And though that's inevitable, this is a cool opportunity to write their own story and to sort of for Seattle to do it their own way. I mean, you never want to see anything happen like what happened in Vegas in the lead up to that game occur anywhere to anybody at any time. it definitely galvanized that city and those guys and those players. And, you know, Derek England, that's a guy who spent a lot of time there, certainly took it all on his shoulders and gave an incredible speech before puck drop with mm-hmm. the first responders and everybody there, and then obviously packed it up and played unbelievable. But there'll be something here that will be special, that will galvanize, and that will bring everyone together. And I think it can be as simple as just getting behind something special as having an NHL franchise. So I don't know as though you top it in the sense that Vegas had the emotions, but you top it in your own way because,
yeah.
Man, oh man, I mean, it's the 32nd team in the NHL. It's history. You're going to be part of it. And just soaking that in and taking it and being proud of what these guys are about to do this season is going to be good.
I think that's really well said. And if you're trying to top what they've done with, you know, the night that comes out and all that, the stage presence and show beforehand, all I know, I don't know what they're going to do on Saturday. I just know that Jerry Bruckheimer is part of the ownership team. So whatever it is, I'm pretty darn excited for what that's going to look like. So
I'll tell you what, you got the guy that orchestrated it in Vegas. Johnny Greco, who was in charge of the entertainment when Vegas came into the league, is your guy here. So I would expect something as special, if not better, because if I know Johnny Greco, I know he's got something cooked up, and I can't wait to see what that is.
That's awesome, man. That's cool. Well, hey, Nick, it's good to meet you. Nick Gismondi of Root Sports, new in town, working here with the Kraken and talking hockey. Let's definitely do this again. It's a lot of fun. So nice to meet you over the radio, and we'll do it in person soon.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Thanks so much to everybody in the city for welcoming me, and come up and say hi. I'll talk hockey with anybody anytime, and I look forward to being back on with you again soon.
That's pretty cool. There you go. There's Nick, Nick Gismondi of Root Sports. He, you know, you talk about those intros and the openings. I will say, in my life, the best opening ceremony type thing before a game, right, to the sort of the hype thing I've ever seen and been at, there have been some cool ones. I mean, basketball does it right. I never was at a Bulls game when they would play Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that is legendary to have been there for
something
like that.
That kind of started it, didn't it?
I think that was really the best. The Suns did something similar around the same time. I mean, I've heard that the Sonics opening was awesome with Deep Purple, right? They would play, was it Perfect Strangers or Knocking at My Back Door, one of those. So I know that there have been some other great ones. The best I've seen was actually at a hockey game. Was at a Montreal Canadiens game. I was at a Bruins Canadiens game. I think it was game 7. It was either game 5 or game 7 up in Montreal. And it was the first time I'd ever seen anything projected onto the ice with laser. So now that's become a little bit more commonplace. But this was like, I don't know, 2007, 8, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in that range.
And so not the 3D stuff, this was just lasers.
It was just like, yeah, they did this, maybe it was a little 3D, but they started really using the ice for the first time to show stuff. And they started off with, like, you know, just sort of like a deep music, and they were projecting all of these words in both English and French, of course, because it's in Montreal. And it was like, you know, championship, and then it would have the definition, right? Or Stanley Cup and the definition. The crowd was getting more and more into it. And then just, like, you know, they killed the lights and they play. And it's not even a song I like all that much. I'm not a huge U2 fan, but they started playing the guitar intro to Where the Streets Have No Name. And people just lost their bleeping minds. It was amazing. And, like, I get chills even just thinking about being in the building in that moment. It was electric. And the Canadiens fans are the most obnoxious people in the world. They make Yankees fans look like kind-hearted souls. They affect the game more than any other crowd in any sport, I think. Because they truly believe every time their team even comes up ice without numbers. You talk about a rush, like Nick was just talking about. You want an odd man rush in hockey, right? 3-on-2, 2-on-1, something where you have a good chance to score. They can come up the ice 2-on-3 where they have no chance. And the crowd believes in their heart because they're so arrogant and so obnoxious that they have a great chance to score. So the crowd goes, and you hear, and you're like, is something big happening? No, they're just like coming up ice to dump it into the back of the, nope. And because of it, I truly believe it affects the players because they turn around like, am I on an odd man rush? Like, what's happening to me here? And I think it affects the refs because they think that, you know, they have a God-given right in this crowd to see their team have a penalty called on their behalf. I hate the Canadiens, man. I hate them. I hate their fans. I hate their
everything.
I hate everything
the
about
team,
them.
Just to be clear.
Well, not the whole country.
The team.
No, they're fans of the Montreal Canadiens. It's 8:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Bob first.
All right, yeah, we've been talking some hockey, and it was nice to talk to Nick Gismondi. I thought he was really good. Hopefully you guys enjoyed him. Root Sports. Epic road trip for the Kraken has come to an end, thankfully. The Kraken lose again last night, this time a little more respectable, 4-2 in New Jersey. But after digging yet another 3-0 hole, they did get goals from Riley Sheahan and Jared McCann, at least to make this one close. Made it 3-2, but the Devils put an empty netter. 4-2 is your final. Lots of action roster-wise before the game. The best news, Yanni Gourde made his Kraken debut a full month earlier than was originally expected. He has recovered from off-season shoulder surgery, and it went very well. Brought that energy he has to the first line last night. Gourde won a couple of Stanley Cups in Tampa and was considered widely to be the best player they selected in the expansion draft. Not as good news about Chris Drieger, the goalie placed on injured reserve, and so he sat last night out. It was supposed to be his start. Instead, it goes to Joey. Is it Dacord or Dacord or Dacord? I thought it was Joey Dacord, but
we should have just asked the Nick's, one guy that
well,
really
Nick said Dacord, so maybe okay. He knows more than I do. Either way, they are coming home Saturday night. Game one here at Climate Pledge Arena. Building got its first concert last night as the Foo Fighters opened it up.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, big day of practice for the Seahawks today. We're going to get a little sense of what's going on with some of these injured players for what has become a must-win game on Monday night. Rashad Penny certainly will be watching him. He's going to be activated from IR, according to Pete Carroll. He should play a big role this week, and especially because we don't know what's going on with Alex Collins. He is trying to bounce back from the injuries that prevented him from finishing the game in Pittsburgh. Starting guard Damian Lewis is a concern as well, so a lot to watch for on the injury front. College. Let's start with the Huskies. No chance of a quarterback change on Montlake, as Jimmy Lake maintains they are, quote, not close to that. Dylan Morris certainly has struggled at times, but I think it's difficult to pin the whole season's issues on him alone. Star prospect, though, Sam Huard is looming on the horizon, so at some point, don't you want to get him some reps? At some point, don't you want to have him in there and give him a springboard into next season when he's presumably going to give him every opportunity to start? I would think that would factor in. And at Washington State University, we get the news this morning that Nick Rolovich's lawyer, this according to Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, released a statement saying he is taking legal action against Washington State and all parties responsible for his, quote, illegal termination. He also accuses AD Pat Chun of discriminatory and vindictive behavior.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, we're getting closer to this World Series matchup as some really good baseball being played. Dodgers come back, storming back in the eighth, really, to bring themselves back from the brink. They were down 5-2, and if they lose that game, they're down 3-0 in the NLCS. Instead, a three-run shot from Cody Bellinger, a huge RBI double from Mookie Betts, and next thing you know, they are down 2-1. Game four tonight at 5 p.m. Series in the ALCS for sure. That is now tied thanks to the Astros getting a game-tying home run from Jose Altuve in the eighth and then a game-untying single from Jason Castro in the ninth inning. It led to a 7-run rally for the Astros after a questionable strike three call that was not made. Ties things up, as we said, at 2 games apiece. Game five today at 2 o'clock in Boston before this series swings back to Houston. Those are three things you need to know every hour. Quarter past the hour.
Something I emailed you last night, and we just got a similar text at the 509 and Kraken talk. How much of the losses are just growing pains? How much is the roster now maybe not being good? Are these teams are played? Have they been good? Are they in the middle quality wise?
Yeah, I don't know that they've played great teams yet. I mean, New Jersey is young. They got some guys on that team and that are good, but I don't know if that's a great team.
So we're not the young core nucleus like the Mariners are right now. I don't think it's that.
I mean, this team is young, but it's not super crazy young. I do think they need some time to work together. I think Nick was a little more positive than I would be. I think that some of these things are just growing pains and they'll get worked out. I do think they need to practice a little bit more. But the concern I've had, honestly, and the only real thing that has concerned me is just their defense. That's supposed to be the strength of this team. Adam Larson and the rest of that group, Carson Soucy and Vince Dunn and you know, obviously Giordano. You know, that's sort of supposed to be their strength. And they've only allowed fewer than 3 goals in one game.
I don't know.
That came at the end of it when, unfortunately, they gave up a lead. So I don't know how wild I've been about the defense they've played early. They've turned the puck over more than you'd like. They've had some issues, as he said, with some spacing in their defensive zone. So I'm not that concerned about their offense. Honestly, it's been better than expected. The defense has not been as good as expected, and I think that's a bit of a concern.
One thing to note, I guess you asked if they've been playing tough teams. Maybe not the toughest teams, but the NHL does a weird staggered schedule to where not only have they been on the road for five straight games, they've been playing a lot of teams that are on their first game.
Yeah, it's kind
of
weird,
so,
right?
So, like, they're tired, and they're on the road, and they're playing a team that it's their opening night, and they're all pumped up and good to go.
Yeah, that has been odd. Yeah, I think that's a good point, Moore, and I think that's probably hurt them as well. I would expect them to come out like a house of fire on Saturday night. But you know what? I actually expected a little more against New Jersey. The Philly game's going to happen. All right, you got your butt kicked. It happens now and again. Bounce back the next day, and maybe I'd just become accustomed to watching the Mariners and what they would do after getting blown out, come back the next day and win 2-1. I was kind of expecting this team to do the same thing. Like, hey, all right, we took our licking. Look, you know, let's get back out there and kind of do what we need to do against New Jersey, who's also kind of a young team. That one was the only one that was kind of like, eh. Would like to see a little bit more spark than coming out and giving up the first three goals in that game.
Okay, I guess the question is, where were they projected to be if you're looking one through the 32 teams, right?
Are they supposed
to be middle of the road?
The Kraken?
Yeah.
Yeah, middle of the road. But in the West, in their division, that should be good enough to get them into the postseason.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's more good teams in the East and in the other Western division. So, you know, like they've played some pretty, Vegas is a pretty good team. I think Columbus is a decent team. I mean, they've played some decent teams, but I think you would have liked to have had one more win on this road trip and just feel a little bit better about where you were. But excited for Saturday night, no matter what. That is going to be absolutely sweet.
I didn't realize that the entertainment guy came from Vegas because we all saw those videos when the Vegas franchise launched and how nutty it was
right in
the building. And now with a brand new building, he got to probably help design a lot of the way that this entertainment's going to be looked and put together.
That's a good point. I don't know how long he's been here, but that's a good point.
I would have to believe that they've been talking to him for
quite
a while.
And you know that Jerry Bruckheimer has been as involved in that as any, making sure that they have all the latest technology available to them. That's going to be quite a show. I don't know. What time do you guys want to get there? Game's at 7? What time are we getting there?
I mean, the pregame stuff, is it like in baseball? It only starts 10 minutes before they start?
Well, I would imagine the first game, though, there's got to be a lot. I don't have any information on like what time we need to be down
there. I want to walk around the arena.
Wouldn't be there at like 5:30, maybe? Does that sound about right?
I live in the neighborhood, so you guys show up whenever you want.
All right.
Parking passes
Justin,
for
we'll
both
meet
of you.
You there. Sounds good. All right, coming up next, let's talk to Michael Bumpus. It's his turn. We do it every Wednesday at 8:30. And then Matt Hasselbeck coming up at 9 o'clock, talking about some of his biggest moments as a Seahawk. It is the Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Washington Wednesdays is powered by Star Rentals, Inc.
It is Washington Wednesday. That's true. Michael Bump is joining us here on 710 ESPN Seattle. What's up, Bump?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I will throw a college question or two at you, and then I want to ask you about DK Metcalf as well. But I saw where Jimmy Lake is saying, hey, it's not time to change quarterback yet, et cetera. All right, fine. But at some point, don't we have to get a little bit more of a sense of maybe getting the feet wet for Sam Huard or seeing what's there leading into next season when I would assume he's the starter, right?
Yeah, the thing is with changing quarterbacks, you just don't want to burn his red shirt. And I don't think it's worth burning his shirt right now. Now, if you get to the last like four games of the season and things aren't looking good, then I say you throw the kid in there and see, you know, see what he can be. But at this point, man, let him sit. You know, you still got what Patrick O'Brien, I believe, is a grad transfer from Colorado who's over there as well. If anything, throw him in there and let's see what he does. But no, I don't think it's time yet. I understand why people would want to, but for the future, I think you have to wait in the last four games. If you feel the same way, then throw Sam.
You think you see him, though, in those last few games? Maybe even get one of those starts in order to see who he, you know, what he is and what you can do?
Yeah, if things continue to go the way they're going, they got Arizona, Stanford, Oregon. So we'll know pretty soon if this team has a future in this league and in this conference just being successful. These next few games, yeah, if it doesn't go well, then I think you have to get Huard in there and see what he does.
In a very unsurprising turn of events, we got the news this morning, I don't know if you've seen, that Nick Rolovich is indeed going to sue Washington State University. He says all parties responsible for his, quote, illegal termination. He accuses Pat Chun of discriminatory and vindictive behavior. I mean, I don't want to get you too deep into this whole thing, but, you know, what do you think when you, as a Wazoo player yourself, what do you make of all this?
The whole situation is unfortunate. You know, I kind of saw it going down when I was at the Pac-12 media day and Nick Rolovich was the only head coach who wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was writing on the wall right there. We knew this was coming. He knew this was coming. And I feel like Nick knew that, okay, if I do get fired, this is the route that I'm going to go. I'm not just going to leave $3 million on the table like that, you know? But it's a tough situation because Pat Chung wasn't the one who said you have to do this or else, you know, it was mandates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every state employee has to do this. So I feel like Nick right now is, he feels like he's been forced out of a position, which he has been forced. He didn't take the vaccine. That was his decision. And he has the right to make that decision, but there are also consequences for your decisions. I thought he was going to fade away to the darkness, ride off to the sunset like a cowboy, and just say, you know what, I'm just going to move on and start another university. Clearly, that's not going to happen. There's a lot of money. When there's money involved, emotions and things take over. So it's about to get sloppy, man. It's about to get sloppy. I just hope these boys can keep playing some good football because they're balling right now.
That Jaden Delora kid's pretty good, huh?
Man, he's the best way I heard him described was he works best under chaos. Like when things are going on around him, he makes things happen, man. 50 touchdowns, 5 mm-hmm. interceptions. This guy looks good.
He's in the right place then because it certainly looks chaotic right now at Washington State. I like him, though. I like his game. I thought what he had to say in the statement he released yesterday was very mature. I don't know. I'm impressed with him. I don't know a ton about him, but I like everything I've seen from him.
From what I've heard, and I've had the privilege to have a couple conversations with him, he's a good leader, man. He's made his mistakes like most college kids are going to do. He's learned from them, and the guys rally around him. You know, he's a guy that can hang out, it seems like, with every group, from the linemen to the D linemen to the running backs.
Huge.
I mean, they seem to love him.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Talking to Michael Bumpus as we do Wednesdays here at 8:30. Let's get to the Seahawks a little bit, and I'll ask you first about DK Metcalf. I don't know about the play not running out of bounds at the end of the game. You've been a wide receiver at a pretty high level. You know to go out of bounds there, right?
Yeah, you got to know to go out of bounds. I know what DK was thinking. I'm going to run this dude over. I'm going to get into the end zone, and we're going to win this thing.
He couldn't be thinking that.
Yeah, of course. Why else would you turn the field and try to run a guy over? He's trying, you know, to be the hero, to be the guy. But in that situation, you know, I've coached high school. I played in the league. I played in college. And, you know, you practice these situations. You go, okay, in this situation, you get what you can. You get out of bounds. I think he had a brain fart, or he was just trying to do too much.
That is a tough time for that kind of a brain fart, man. Yeah. That didn't work out all that well for him. And then he got into a Twitter beef with Shannon Sharpe. What are you doing?
Shannon Sharpe can talk with the best of them, so you got to be careful.
Real careful.
Yeah, who you go after. But I think that DK is still young, man. He just showed his youth right there. And then, you know, he backs up and says, you know what? Live and learn, work in progress, my bad. He probably didn't know really who Shannon Sharpe was.
Right.
You know, some of these kids, they just don't know. You look up Shannon Sharpe. The thing about DK is his first 3 years are better than Shannon Sharpe's first 3 years. I had to go back and look. I'm like, yeah, but DK, he has a point right there. But
he's playing wide receiver, not tight end, though.
Yeah, yeah. But it is what it is. Numbers are numbers. But then you go back, 8-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion. You know, Shannon Sharpe is a dude. So I think he might have done his research or his PR group or his boards or whoever. And it was like, you know what? I was just emotional in that moment. And I'm glad he backed up and, you know, and pretty much said my bad.
I agree with that. Shannon Sharpe's in the Hall of Fame, right?
He's
got to be.
Yes, he is.
He sure seems like he should be. All right.
Yeah, he's in there.
So let me play you this. You know, we've been kind of going on and on about Pete and some of the stuff he has said over the last week or so. But this, what he said to me Monday morning is the one that stands out. And this where they're going with the offense and what they did in running the ball in the third quarter. This is what Pete said.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
What's Pete saying?
He's saying that you're going to see us run the ball a lot more and that we have to rely on the run for us to be successful. And I think initially you do have to do that, especially when you have Geno Smith back there. If Russell was out there, I think things could be a little different. But with Geno, you got to establish a run, open things up. It's the stuff we hear every year, Mike. I've been hearing this for 5 years. I've been covering the Hawks.
Yeah, it's true. And it just sort of speaks to some of that tension between running the ball, throwing the ball, coach, quarterback, et cetera. How does Russ take that sound?
I think Russ takes it as that's Pete Carroll. You know, just like how Pete Carroll takes Russ pregame, going through his fake game and running around. That's just Russ. You know, at this point of their relationship, they know who each other are. They can almost finish each other's sentences. So I guarantee you, Russ is like, yeah, that sounds good. But, man, if I'm in the game and I get to that line of scrimmage and I don't like what I see, I'm checking out that thing.
What did you think of Russ doing the whole mental – what would you call that? Mental
mental reps, man.
It's just mental reps. Okay, what did you make of it?
You know, personally, that's not me. No, I wouldn't do that.
You're not a mental rep guy.
I'd probably walk
visualization.
The
field. Isn't that the word?
There
visualization.
You go. Visualization, yeah. I would probably walk the field and visualize it. You know, that's kind of how I get down. But that's Russell Wilson, man. People are making fun of this guy, right? And for me, I watch it and I cringe a little bit. I'm like, I wouldn't do that. But Russell does his own thing, man. And I'm talking to my boys. I'm like, yeah, we can talk about it, but he's successful. He's a Hall of Famer.
Of course.
He's won a Super Bowl. He's a gamer. Whatever he has to do to stay ready, I guess we just have to roll.
How many texts did you get from your boys, though?
Oh, they're blowing me, especially my boys in Cali who are like Niner fans and stuff. Like, look at your quarterback. I'm like, man, well, he's in the game, guys. He's staying in the game.
Maybe it helps him. And I do think we tend to make fun of people that are that invested and because they seem to go well beyond what we're willing to do. It just doesn't look cool. But Russ doesn't care. He doesn't care if you think he looks cool. He's perfectly happy as long as he thinks it's helping him win. So, yeah, good stuff. Bump, thank you. We'll talk next week.
All right, take care.
All right, always good to talk to Michael Bumpus. We do that every Wednesday at 8:30. All right, we're going to talk to Hasselbeck. We've got a whole bunch of good stuff for him planned starting at 9 o'clock. We've got tickets we're giving away for Monday night. Before we do any of that, though, we got to talk to the professor, John Clayton, with all the latest next on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
All right. Well, Mike Tomlin apparently was upset over what happened at the end of the game the other day. We have some sound from the Pittsburgh Steelers coach. He didn't like the game being stopped for the official review with a second left.
I hate it. I cannot believe that game was stopped, a confirmed catch, no catch, in that moment. That's all I'm going to say.
What explanation did they give to you?
That's all I'm going to say.
But why is he so upset? The game, they had already stopped the clock with a spike. What's the problem?
I have no idea. I mean, you know, sometimes coaches just get infuriated over whatever decision and all that stuff. I mean, you could see he was upset toward the end at the end of the game, but it's like, what was his problem? I mean, what basically happened that he really questioned?
I would understand if the Seahawks had not been able to spike the ball in time and had been gifted a free timeout for a review that really did not need to take place. That would have been a mistake. But they got the spike down, so I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it sort of functioned like one of those timeouts to make the kicker think about it for longer. It probably helped him.
Right, agreed. It's like, I don't understand it. I mean, Mike, and because he's on the competition committee and all those different things, probably overreacting more than anything else. And again, it's like, remember, this is a Mike Tomlin who actually likes the taunting rule.
Well, not only likes it, I mean, he sounded like he sort of was part of the reasoning behind the whole taunting rule, right?
Yeah, well, if he is, I mean, he made a mistake. I don't know if this one would be considered a mistake with the spiking thing or the non-pass or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wanting a taunting rule was just, it's ridiculous. I mean, because again, I mean, you've got all these penalties for nothing happening, and then the bad part about the taunting rule is 15 yards.
Yeah, it seems like a lot. Baker Mayfield looks like he's not going to play this weekend.
Yep, nope, it's official. I mean, he's out. So
so hadn't he said yesterday that it was he's going to make that decision, that he's the only one who gets to decide?
Well, he can say it, but it's not going to be true. It's going to be the team that's going to make the decision. And here he is, torn, a completely torn left labrum. Completely torn left labrum, and you know, he was hoping to play on four, you know, with 4 days off. It's like or three, you know, Sunday to Thursday. I mean, that's a lot to ask. And right now, I mean, you're kind of wondering, with a completely torn labrum, can he come back for the next couple weeks?
Yeah, no, it is his left shoulder, right?
Yeah,
it's not his throwing shoulder.
Left labrum.
So
yeah.
He's got to be a pretty tough dude to have been playing through that as long as he has.
Yeah,
right?
He has, no question about it, because he's gone several weeks. And I give him credit for that. I mean, you can see that, you know, he's not as effective because of the way that he's playing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, toughness is there for Baker Mayfield. But right now, he's going to be out. I mean, there's so many players on the Browns. What? They had an injury list on Monday of 20 players. They had 19 yesterday. They may be out with their first two tackles. Odell Beckham Jr. has a third-degree ACL injury, so he very well may miss the game. Mm-hmm. They're down their top two running backs because, you know, they won't have Nick Chubb in this game, and they had to put their other running back on the injured reserve list. I mean, yeah, they're in tough shape.
You think I know you sort of are well on the record as saying that Cleveland will never amount to anything because they're Cleveland. But
yeah.
Do you think Baker Mayfield is a good enough quarterback to win playoff games?
No, I don't.
What do you think's holding them back?
The quarterbacks in the AFC that are better.
Well, okay, I meant more in a vacuum. Not to say that he's... Okay, I guess that makes some sense. So would you just rank him below Mahomes and Allen and some of the other guys that are...
Yeah, I mean, there's probably about seven quarterbacks in the AFC that I would rank, maybe even eight, that rank higher than him. Now, again, and you'll appreciate this going back to the East Coast, is that at ESPN, when I did my ratings, you know, for quarterbacks, you know, I broke them off into categories.
Right.
Where I had the elite and I had the, you know, the middle class. And the middle class, I called the Chad Penningtons.
Yes. Very accurate, but not with much arm strength.
Yeah, exactly. And so I look at Baker Mayfield as being a Chad Pennington type
really?
Of quarterback.
I think he's got more than Chad Pennington, no?
No. Well, Chad Pennington's good enough to get you into the playoffs. Is he good enough to get you a playoff win? And that's and he wasn't. And that's what I look at Baker Mayfield, because, again, you know, so much of this is once you get into playoffs, unless there's a bad playoff year, is that, you know, you're going against better quarterbacks.
Who's going to start this week for San Francisco? Is it going to be Jimmy?
Jimmy Garoppolo. Okay. Yeah, he practiced on Monday, and, you know, it's like he's back. Obviously, Tuesday, I think, was a day off, so he'll practice today. And now also Trey Lance is a little bit banged up with his knee.
Yeah. Did you see what Jimmy Ward said there? He was asked about facing DeForest Buckner, right, because he used mm-hmm. to be in San Francisco, and now he's in Indy. They're going to face him this week. He had a pretty good line.
Yeah. Yeah, couldn't keep everyone. So maybe, I don't know. He probably could have made it work somehow. I don't know. The Rams keep doing it. I don't know how.
How do the Rams keep... He's right, man. Uh-huh. How do the Rams just get to pay everybody? Do they have a different salary cap from everyone else?
No. I mean, what they do is that they trade away their first-round picks, and, you know, they basically, you know, create contracts by restructuring and doing those different things. But also, when you think about it, who are they paying? I mean, they're paying Matthew Stafford. Obviously, they have a big money invested in, you know, Jared Goff because of the $22.2 million they have in dead money there.
They're paying Aaron Donald, right?
They're paying Aaron Donald. They're paying Jalen Ramsey. But who else are they paying?
Aren't they paying some of the other guys on that on that defensive line?
Not really. No.
Really? I
yeah.
thought some of those guys were making some money.
Well, I mean, Ashawn Robinson's making about $7 million. Remember, you know, because of the Stafford trade, you know, they had to let Michael Brooks go and a couple other defensive linemen.
They let Alex Okafor go a couple years ago
when
they made one of the other deals.
Yeah. So it's like, and, you know, basically, you know, when they made that deal, they basically had to immediately say goodbye to four defensive starters, and then Micah, you know, Micah Kizer, who was he played a lot as a linebacker. You know, they had to let him go at the beginning of, right before the start of the season. So they've had to make a lot of changes on defense. And of course, in many ways, they paid the price. They're still great. I mean, they're still one of the top teams in football, but their defense ranks in the 20s.
Matt Hasselbeck going into the Ring of Honor on Monday night. We're going to talk to him here in a few minutes for the entirety of the next hour. I just want to go through some of his greatest moments. When you think of Matt, what is his greatest moment in a Seahawks uniform?
Well, I think his greatest moment was getting the team to the Super Bowl, certainly. And then, of course, having all those bad calls. I mean, here's Matt Hasselbeck called for an illegal tackle in the Super Bowl. I mean, come on. What was that?
I know.
That was crazy. And so it's like, but what you like about him is just how consistent he was, what a great leader he was, and what a great guy he was, too. And so, you know, his ability to work with Mike Holmgren, you know, get that offense going, I thought was fantastic.
John, fantastic to talk to you every day. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay.
All right, 8:45 every single morning with John Clayton. And he's right. Matt is a great guy, great storyteller, too. So we're going to get some of those stories from him coming up next. Plus, we got tickets for you guys if you want to go on Monday night to see the Saints and the Seahawks. Don't go anywhere. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.